We're going to discuss another chapter and verse from Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge. This morning we spoke of knowledge of the absolute. That means knowledge of that which doesn't change through past, present, and future. Knowledge that doesn't change when material conditions change. Knowledge that is not subject to material transformation. Now, today we're going to go, or tonight, we'll go deeper into the most confidential kind of absolute knowledge. Let us hear how Lord Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, presents this most confidential knowledge. Rajya vidya rajya guyam pavitram idamuttamam pachaksha avagamam dharmyam sasukam kartam avyayam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So please meditate on this statement by Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is describing to you what he's offering to you. Rajya Vidya, the king of education. You all have some education to varying degrees. Bachelor's degree, master's degree, whatever. But what is the king, the Rajavidya? That's what you should have a thirst for. Rajaguyam, the king of confidential knowledge. Confidential means not everyone is privy to it. Why? Because they don't have the qualification. Just like you only reveal yourself and your inner secrets to your friends, similarly, Bhagavan Sri Krishna only reveals himself to those who are qualified. In order to actually get in touch with the innermost realities of the universe, Krishna is asking you to accept the inherent personalism that if you become favorably inclined toward him, he'll reveal this confidential knowledge to you. After all, what does Krishna tell Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita? Bhukto sime sakat cheti rahasyam etat uttamam. Arjuna, because you are my devotee, my bhakta, as well as my friend, my sakha, therefore you can understand this knowledge. In other words, your attitude is most important in determining what you can understand. Once you enter the bhakti laboratory, you have to take into account your consciousness and the quality of it. This is what counts most in the bhakti science, the quality of your consciousness. Now, according to mundane researchers, the quality of your consciousness doesn't make any difference. It's simply your research abilities, the various laboratory tests that you're going to perform. Your consciousness can be anything. Doesn't matter. But in spiritual science, your consciousness is most important. How pure is it? Does it have the right attitude? So Krishna explains to Arjuna, because you have that right attitude, you're my devotee, you're my friend, therefore, rahasyam hetat uttamam, you can understand this greatest of all sciences, the secret of all secrets. You all have friends and family, and you share confidential things between friends and family. Because your friends and family members have qualified themselves to earn your trust. They share your interest, you hope. and they are wanting your welfare. Therefore, you speak to them. The Supreme Consciousness, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, says the same thing. If you become favorably aligned with the Supreme Personality Godhead, then He'll reveal to you the most confidential knowledge. It's a different type of education. Now, just because this different type of education doesn't fit within the understanding of what people today call science, doesn't mean it's not science. It's just a different way of knowing. Indeed, it's a superior way of knowing. So if you want to connect this kind of knowledge with India, then you must say, this is India's greatest gift to the world. Actually, this gift comes from beyond this world. But it has appeared in India. So therefore, the greatest gift is these spiritual scientific techniques for understanding and experiencing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Let's hear this verse once again. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and it is joyfully performed. We'll hear a little bit from Srila Prabhupada's purport, which makes everything very clear. Maybe some of you thought that Bhagavad Gita is some archaic, outdated book which doesn't relate to your present life. Well, if you think that, listen to this. Now the Lord says that this ninth chapter is the king of all such knowledge, the essence of all knowledge that can be derived from the study of the Vedas and different kinds of philosophy. It is the most confidential because confidential or transcendental knowledge involves understanding the difference between the soul and the body. And the king of all confidential knowledge culminates in devotional service. Why does that king of all confidential knowledge culminate in devotional service? Because bhakti yoga, or devotional service, is beyond even understanding you're not the body, you're spirit soul. Bhakti yoga is about the activities of the pure soul in perfection. That is the most confidential knowledge. We'll continue. Generally, people are not educated in this confidential knowledge. They are educated in external knowledge. As far as ordinary education is concerned, people are involved with so many departments: politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, engineering, and so forth. There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world and many huge universities. But there is, unfortunately, no university or educational institution where the science of the spirit soul is instructed. Yet, the soul is the most important part of the body. Without the presence of the soul, the body has no value. Still, people are placing great stress on the bodily necessities of life, not caring for the vital soul. What do you think of that? Still, people are placing great stress on the bodily necessities of life, not caring for the soul. When without the soul, the body is useless. Can we see ourselves in that light, putting great stress on the bodily necessities? How much does your body need to be comfortable? Actually, even if your body may be comfortable, if your mind is disturbed, then you're in such anxiety and you suffer so much. So where is the money that can buy peace of mind? Sometimes people say, well, Money can't buy everything. But what it can't buy, you can rent. Money can't buy or rent peace of mind. And you'll understand that more and more as you enter the workforce, if you already haven't entered the workforce, and you see the stress levels, incredible stress levels. Now in India, the heart attacks are hitting the 20 and 30 year old executives. The rate of heart attacks has gone up so high in the young executives. It used to be just the older executives in their 40s and 50s. Now it's down into the 30s, even into the 20s, because the stress is so intense. That there's so much stress and so much sickness in response to the stress shows you something is wrong. It's nature's way of letting you know you're going about things the wrong way. I can understand that most of you accept that there is some kind of God. But where is the knowledge of God? You see, it's one thing to have this feeling there's a God, but what about knowledge of God? Where do you go to get that? I wonder how many of you have thought you needed knowledge of God. Here you are in Australia. Now, everyone knows there is a Prime Minister of Australia, right? Okay. You all accept that. But you also accept the laws of Australia and you abide by them. Now, if we say there's God, most of you, I think, will agree. But what about the laws of God? Who knows anything about that? Anyone here know anything about the laws of God? You know all about the laws of Australia. You accept there's a prime minister, and you accept that there are laws. Now, most of you believe, yes, there's a God. But who knows anything about the laws coming from God? You see how sentimental the position is? How can we live without understanding the laws that affect us? Are the only laws that affect us man-made? Some of you mentioned karma. Every action has a reaction. So the karmic reactions that you get, they're not administered by ordinary men. That some of you accept there is karma means you accept there's a higher universal law. Now, we're going to be very weak if we simply have a little notion that there's God and we have no understanding of what are the laws of God. Dharma, that Sanskrit word means the laws of God. You cannot say, I believe in God, yet you have no knowledge of the laws of God. How do you harmonize your basic feeling that there's God with your scientific and technical training? Many people will tell you that your belief in God is very dangerous for scientific progress, because as soon as you say there's God who did everything, then you lose your scientific curiosity. You lose your technological incentive. Because whenever there's some insurmountable problem about how the universe works, you can always just say, well, God did it. So many scientists today are angry that they feel religion has a very detrimental or negative effect on people, and it stops scientific research. They claim that if you're just skeptical about everything that cannot be perceived by your senses or scientific instruments that extend your senses, then you have a chance to make great discoveries, great scientific breakthroughs. But as soon as you say there's God, all scientific research stops. This is how they're presenting things. They give an example of Newton. He came up with his law of gravity, but there was something about it he couldn't explain. So he said, well, there must be a God who's behind the system. Then some scientists came after Newton, who was very haughty and said, oh, what is this God stuff? I'll give you a theory that better explains what Newton was trying to explain, or completes what Newton was trying to do. So atheistic scientists put this forward as an example of how your belief in God is anti-scientific research. Whenever you come up with something that you can't understand, you say, God. Whereas we, scientists who are not believers, we just say, we don't understand, we'll keep struggling, we'll keep working. And that is the real attitude that is progressive for human society. What do you think? Huh? Who agrees? If you just throw out God and just say, there are things we don't understand, and we'll keep struggling, we'll keep trying. That's the real attitude that will benefit human society. Anyone agrees? Huh? You agree? You throw out God, yes? You agree? And just say, we don't understand it now, but in the future we'll understand. Now, this is called God of the gaps. Whenever there's a gap in your knowledge, you bring in God. How did the universe come into being? Well, we don't know it as scientists, so then we say, there's God who did it. They consider this very primitive. And it's anti-progressive for your research. Why bring in God? Just say you don't know and you're working on it. Ask for more research money. And in the future, if not you, but someone else, they'll make the discovery. Even after you're dead and gone, to where? No one knows. But science will march on. So they're advocating that this is the constructive attitude for human progress. Just forget God. In fact, now a very outspoken group of scientists are having best-selling books, at least in the English language, and they're saying that God is a delusion. God is a social nightmare that people have to wake up from finally. Look at the terrorists. Look at the Islamic terrorists. This shows you religion at its true potential. All you do is believe and you can do anything. Blow up buildings, suicide bombers. Once you have faith, once you're a believer, then nothing can check you. No reason, no rationality can check you. So therefore, you should accept that believing in God, religion, is a delusion. It's some kind of, you know, sickness. Yes, these ideas are becoming very popular. Soon you'll see them in India. One prominent scientist with a best-selling book is saying that to teach your children religion is child abuse. Now, how are you going to be able to cope with all this if you just have a sentimental belief in God? These atheistic scientists are complaining. Why are you forcing us to accept the known concepts of God? They don't know anything about Krishna, all these persons who are protesting. They say, why should we accept that God sent his son and he died on a cross? God's son was born from a virgin birth. Why must we accept all this? And what can the Christian scientific person say in response? Well, our God is a good God. Our God is a just God. We believe in him. That's all they can say. Because they have no knowledge of God, practically speaking. The greatest wealth of India is knowledge of God. You can say what is God. Whereas in the Western world, yes, there is some religion. And that religion accepts God, but there's no knowledge of God. If you want to understand God, then you have to go to India. But then, what happens when the brightest students of India turn their back on God? That means they're turning their back on their greatest wealth. Or maybe not completely turning their back, but just don't know anything. What will be the future of the world? Generally, people want two things at the same time. They want scientific advancement, technological advancement, and they want religion too. Both things together. But atheistic scientists want you to disown religion and just take the technological advancement. Let us say, here you are this weekend, and you can see very nicely the beauty all around, nature. Maybe some of you were thinking, oh, this is too much to happen by chance. There must be an intelligent designer behind all this. Any of you were thinking that this weekend? Yeah? Yes. Now, the scientists would say, oh, this is a great weakness. You're being unscientific. This notion that there's an intelligent designer behind everything can't be tested through science. Therefore, you cannot give it any credence or give it any importance because it can't be tested. But we disagree. And what Krishna is explaining in this ninth chapter, the king of all knowledge, most confidential knowledge, is that, yes, you can test for Krishna's existence, but you must adopt the techniques that Krishna recommends. You can't test for Krishna's existence using the kind of tests you learn about in university, in the laboratory. You have to enter the bhakti laboratory. So this weekend, I want you all to become very clear that you are not indulging in religious belief. This weekend we want to liberate you from religious belief, as ordinarily known. And we want to introduce you to the world of spiritual science as given by Lord Krishna. Okay? So forget all your anxieties about religious tradition and customs. Let us try to understand the science of the Supreme, and let us try to understand the techniques, the methods for verifying the existence of the spiritual energy, the spiritual reality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spirit soul. This is what Krishna consciousness is about. The greatest need in this world is precise knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People talk about God. They have no idea, though, what is God. You see, in Australia. Not a very church-going people. Christianity really died here decades ago. The same in New Zealand. To a certain extent, you can't blame the people because they're not getting knowledge of God. But you have access to the world's greatest, most comprehensive spiritual knowledge of God. Are you taking advantage? You have access to non-fanatical knowledge of God. So many people are afraid now of religion because of what the terrorists are doing. The terrorists, they just say, this is what our scripture says, so we must do it. Jihad, holy war, our scripture says this. Now, whether or not their scripture says that is another thing. But still, they have this religious fervor, supposedly. So, atheistic scientists say that this religious fervor is causing so much trouble in the world. It's turning people into terrorists. You can't reason with them. You can't use any logic with them. Therefore, we need to turn the world away from religious sentiment to pure logic and reason. And then only will there be peace. What do you think? What do you think?
Terrorists don't have any religion.
What's that?
Terrorists don't have any religion, like we are not religious at all. So it's a bad way to add religion for someone who is not religious at all.
No, the terrorists, they say they're very religious.
Yeah, anybody can say anything in that way.
They do. They do. When they, you know, explode themselves in a bomb, then they're going to heaven and they will enjoy. So therefore, many people in the world, thinking people, they're saying, this shows that there's a problem with religion. You can just convince yourself of anything and do it. So what do you think? How will you defend yourself? You're believers. You all believe in God. I don't think we have any atheists here. But do you have knowledge of God? And do you feel the need to have knowledge of God? Or this is going to be a sentimental aspect of your life? What do you say? Just last week in California, there was a big conference of mainly atheistic scientists, Nobel Prize winners. They met in California, financed by a rich businessman. The meeting was financed. And their goal was how to rid the world of religion. And they were giving their so-called proofs why religion is destructive. So the only argument was, they said, between choice A and choice B, shall we smash religion with a crowbar or a baseball bat? Take your pick. The light approach or the soft approach? So they were arguing. The most expressive ones were saying, we have to say the truth that is necessary to get people to stop being religious. And then the more moderate ones were saying, even though we know religion's not true, we have to be gentle with the people. We don't want to shake them up too much. Everyone needs something to cling to. Everyone's entitled to their notions and philosophies. So we don't want to disturb the people, even though we know religion is just a dream. Those are the moderates. And the more aggressive ones were saying, we've got to stop babying the people and just come right out in their face and say religion is a sickness, it's a disease. So those are your two choices. Which one would you take? Religion is a sickness and a disease, or religion is a tale that most people need to believe in order to feel okay?
You can't prove either of them in their scientific research.
But now, very good. So this is what they did. They had one scientist, top scientist, he's the director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York City. He said, rather than aggressively tell people there's no God and religion is a sickness, why don't we do something like this? And he showed a slideshow of very, how do you say, shocking birth defects of children who were just born. And he said, now anyone can understand the conclusion. There can't be a God. There can't be an intelligent designer. Look at all these birth defects. That's the proof. Another Nobel Prize winner, he said, how can you say that there is a God when we had such things happening as the Holocaust in World War II? That shows you there's no God. What are you going to say to that kind of thing?
Reaction to an action?
Karma.
Karma. Who says karma? What? Who supervises the karma? No, let's hear from others. Who supervises the karma? God. But where is our knowledge of God? Do we just say there's karma? How many of you are trying to find the rules how to live in this world so that you don't get bad karma? How many of you are doing that? Most just say, oh, there's karma, but you don't try to find out what are the rules. It's like you're living in Australia and you say there's a road code, but none of you ever try to understand what the road code is. Doesn't make sense, does it? So just see the sentiments that we have. There's God, there's karma. But how do these understandings affect your life? So these scientists were telling each other, we have to get into a preaching spirit, just like the religious preachers. We have to face the world and speak the truth. There is no God. Religion is a sickness. It stops scientific research, stops scientific progress. What are you all going to say to that?
One more religion.
Now, let's hear from others also. I'm glad you're enthusiastic. What are you going to say?
You stick to your belief, let me stick to mine.
They like that when you say, you stick to your belief, I'll stick to mine. Just see the madness. In the face of all reason and logic, he wants to stick to belief. He wants to be a believer. This is the scientific age. You should only accept things that can be tested. Can your beliefs be tested?
Yes.
How? By asking your grandmother? No. How can your beliefs be tested?
I can ask the same counter question. How can your beliefs be tested?
We go right into the laboratory. We can show you.
So where's the end of the universe?
Wait, one at a time, please.
I think you should finish it first.
You accept that there's God. Why?
This is a very nice. There's an email that I recently seen in which the philosophy goes that there's a heat. He uses the concept of heat and cold. Hot and cold to prove that there is no such thing as cold, but you still use that as a concept. In the same way, there are many things in the world that you don't have to feel, you don't have to see, but it exists.
How do you know?
I have a... Sorry?
How do you know?
I know from inside. I don't know.
But this is not scientific. Similarly, you could feel with your intuition that it's good to blow up people. And God is pleased. This is what happens when you base your life on things that aren't rational, that can't be proved in the laboratory. Anyone else? Who else?
The thing inside us that is running all of us, and the thing that goes out, that stops all working, a person dies, that is God.
That is God?
Yeah, that is inside us, that's running all of us.
How do you know? Who told you this?
I read in the scriptures that...
What scriptures?
Suppose the thing goes out, and man stops to work, that's the God. But the thing that...
You read it, but... Can you show it in a laboratory? Just see. You're one of those persons who are ruining the world. This is just something your ancestors learned in the village. Anyone else? Any other true believers here? They're all hiding now. Who else believes in... someone else? Who else believes in God? Now no one believes in God. Everyone's hiding. They're afraid. Come on. Another believer. No one wants to say anything now.
Just I want to tell. Suppose you are believing that you are making some assumptions. So if that
suppose what?
If you are believing, you are making assumptions, and assumptions You're cannot be proved.
Assumptions.
Yes.
So assumptions cannot be proved. We are making assumptions.
No. We are simply having a laboratory. And we only say what can be tested in the laboratory.
Yes, I want to ask two scientists, can they measure the temperature by tachometer? They cannot measure the temperature by tachometer.
But you are talking about God.
Yeah. So do you have instrument to test the
God?
There are instruments like bhakti, yoga. Then you can test the God.
But in order to supposedly practice bhakti yoga, you have to change your behavior. So it's not universally accepted by all. It's not universally possible for everyone. It's only possible for those who agree to change their behavior. What about me? I don't want to change my behavior.
But just let me give you the example. You know the tachometer, which measures the meter, means speed, RPM. And why tachometer you want to measure temperature? How can you measure the temperature? You have to be thermometer to measure the temperature. That's why if you want to know God, you should change the behavior.
You should what?
Change your behavior. You should believe first what are the apparatus. You have to use apparatus to measure the God.
No. Real science means never mind your behavior.
Yeah.
You can understand anything. It doesn't depend on your behavior. Just like, you know this Stephen Hawking, supposedly the greatest mathematician? Everyone has heard of him.
Yeah.
He's completely paralyzed, right? And he can't even speak. He needs a synthesizer to speak. The muscles in his... Right. So, he's recognized throughout the world as the most brilliant mathematician. He's been paralyzed for so many decades. And... He had a faithful wife who took care of him. You can imagine, a woman, you're married to a man who's completely paralyzed, he can't even talk, and you take care of him so loyally and so nicely. And what did he do? He, some or other, had some affair with his nurse. And when his children asked him, because he had children before he was completely paralyzed, they're in their 20s. When they asked him, why did you do this? Mother was taking care of you for so many decades, helping you, and now you're having some affair with the nurse? He said, I just wanted to show the world I could do it. This is the most brilliant man. And he's going to teach you about the universe. Do you accept that? But what you're saying is, even though he behaves in such an abominable way, he's such a brilliant scientist. We'll listen to him. We will make the distinction between his behavior and what he is, what the knowledge he's giving. Right? Right. So once you accept this principle, then you're accepting the Western style of what is knowledge, which is completely different from what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna says, Rajavidya Rajaguyam, this is the king of knowledge, the most secret of all secrets, he's talking about knowledge that can only be accessed by someone who has the proper behavior, the proper consciousness. This kind of knowledge is unknown to Western science. Because they can't understand the role of consciousness and behavior, therefore, their knowledge is just of matter. They can only understand gross matter. They cannot even understand subtle matter. Just gross matter. If you want to understand the science of God, then you must hear from God how you should adjust your life. But if you just say, I believe in God, but you have no knowledge of the laws of God, just see how dangerous your situation is. It's like saying, I believe there's a Prime Minister of Australia, but you know nothing about the laws in Australia. You would call such a person very foolish. What I want you to understand is that the whole world is suffering because of lack of knowledge of God. And ordinary religious people don't know what to say. Well, all they can do is say, I believe. It's my belief, just like you say. It's my intuition, there's a God. My grandmother told me. my priest in my village or pujari in the village told me. Can you give definitive, comprehensive knowledge of God? No. Now this is a challenge to you all. Because you all, I'm sure, 99% of you all believe that there is a God. But where's your knowledge? So you're left in a very embarrassing situation. If you had to face one of these powerful scientists, you'd be trembling. What's another thing they say? You want to understand how this universe came into being. Instead of saying that there must be a physical arrangement for this, there must be a physical explanation, you jump to God and say, God did it. But we can now give you a more probable explanation than God. Mm-hmm. Now, it is true, they admit, the chances that life occurred in this universe, let's say, is maybe 1 out of 1 billion chances that life was able to happen randomly in this universe. Okay, we'll admit that. But what if there are 300 billion universes and this is the only universe that in which all the conditions for life were perfectly adjusted? Now, if there's just one universe, then it's 1 out of 1 billion chances for this universe to be able to give rise to life, to have the perfect conditions for life. But if there are 300 billion universes, there's a great chance that one universe will have got it right. This is called the multiverse theory. So, don't believe in God. Just believe that there are 300 billion universes. And out of those 300 billion, only one, by chance, had all the perfect conditions for life.
So we can ask them to prove the 300 billion universes. You couldn't even prove the end of the universe, our universe. So get the 300 billion universes, I believe.
But we would rather believe in 300 billion universes than believe in God.
But prove it, because they are scientists. So
we will in the future. You will join us. You will join us. We'll give you research money. Grant money. You'll change your tune.
You prove it, I'll hang on to what I
do. No.
when you join our staff, we'll give you big position. We'll give you big position. Mm-hmm. First we give you permanent residency. Just that'll be enough to change your tune. And then we give you big salary. We give you secretary. Australian secretary. She'll be very liberal. She'll introduce you to Australia.
Yeah, get it, man. That means you prove it, so you are offering something else.
No. We are simply saying, we're honest. We're saying we don't understand now, but in the future we'll understand. But you ruin all scientific research possibilities by saying God did it.
You can't prove it, then God is. It's too frightening.
We just say we are not believers. We just accept what scientific research reveals. Isn't that more civilized?
It didn't reveal a lot. There's still a lot of things that it didn't reveal. There's no end of universe inside. There's 300 billion universes, no solution for that.
We are trying for the solution. And you will join us.
You don't have a solution right now, so I don't.
We'll get it in the future.
Okay. But right now I have my solution, which is God. You don't have a solution, so I shouldn't have.
What is God then? Okay, we'll listen. Tell us, what is God?
God is light that you can't bear if it's too much. You need light to see, but if too much you can't bear.
What about the darkness?
Yeah, you can if you are not able to see stuff.
You say God is light, but what about the darkness?
Let me tell you another thing. God is warmth. But if it's too much, it's heat, you will die. God is water that you need. If it's too much, you'll drown. God is air that you need. But if it's too rarefied or too compressed, you'll die again. So you can't assimilate God. It's beyond you. You're just a tiny little spot.
So what you're telling me is God is things in nature. Is that what you're saying?
To your perception, that's what it is.
Well, then tell me more. What is God?
Can you actually take it? Can you see so much light? Can you actually look at the sun?
Sunlight, air is all around, but you tell me what is God.
If you can look at the sun for 10 minutes, I'll tell you what God is. You'll see God. When you look at the sun for 10 minutes, you'll see God.
This is the point. This is our point. When you become a believer, you have all this irrationality, which has ruined the world, causing terrorism. Religious wars are caused by this attitude. It's dogmatic, unscientific. God is light, God is air.
Can you live without them?
Huh?
Can you live without them? Can you live without air and light?
That doesn't mean that there is God. Tell me, what is God?
God is above this. He has made these energies for us.
He's made the energies for us. Oh, now you'll be a good Christian. He's made it all for us to enjoy. God has put everything here for our pleasure. Thanks be to God. He gave it all to us to do what we like with it. Yes, is that, you like that kind of religion? God gave it all to us. He created it and gave it to us to do with what we like. Tell me, what is God?
God is supreme power.
Supreme power. Go on. Supreme power. Huh? He's got big muscles or what?
I heard somewhere like it's beyond intelligence and intellectual. So really, what you are asking here is something within the intelligence of us, whereas as per that theory, it's beyond that intelligence. So what we are doing finally is we are relying or believing on something which has been said somewhere. And there's nothing else we can think about that belief. And everyone has to rely on some belief somewhere. Even this materialistic scientist, they have to rely on somewhere.
Yes, but Krishna doesn't ask you for a belief. What about that?
Yeah, I haven't reached to that point.
You haven't reached to that point.
You just,
yes, in the future you'll get to that point. Huh? So, what is the difference between you and the scientist? You say in the future.
I'm not trying to show them down. They are doing their best what they can do with their mind. And we are also trying to do our best for whatever we believe in. They are also believing in, 300 billion universes.
More specifically, they believe in matter, that matter can do impossible things, inconceivable things. Matter can produce life. Matter can produce consciousness. Matter can produce laws of nature. This is their implicit belief that they don't talk about. They are physicalists. Everything comes from matter, inert matter. Inert matter produces consciousness. Inert matter produces life. Inert matter produces the laws of nature. The perfect coordination of the universe all comes from matter, physical causes. This is their implicit belief, which they don't talk about. Do you feel comfortable with that? How many of you feel comfortable with that? You don't. You have some feeling there must be a God. There must be some controller that can't be explained. But unless you all get knowledge of God, what good is your sentiment? The whole world is suffering for this lack of knowledge of God. You have access to it. Now, why is it? Here's another question for you. Why is it that compared to, say, the Australians, you all have more controlled behavior? Certain things you don't do as easily, let's say, as Australians do. Why is that? You have some sense of morals. Maybe you'd like to get rid of them, but still, it's there. Maybe when you go to the movies and you dream, oh, I could be like that. But why is it that you have this culture of restraint and sense control and morality comparatively more than others? Why is that? It just happened to be like that?
It was partly in this.
Well, that's why we need to hear from others. We want everyone to speak. Sorry. Huh? Why? Is it just some cultural thing? Is that all?
Yeah.
Just a cultural thing. How many think it's just a cultural thing? Raise your hands. Okay, 2, 3. Is there any deeper reason?
Yeah. Like, we are more aware of the spirit within us.
How is that?
Because all around us, like from where we come from, the awareness is generally higher. Like
of what? Awareness of what?
The awareness of something beyond just the physical body.
Which is the
soul, and we want our soul to be at a certain level. We don't want to bring the soul down, so we don't want to indulge in things which will take the soul to a lower level. It's just inherently, consciously there in people who come from India.
All right. So, where is the knowledge of the soul?
The knowledge, like, it can be proven, the existence of God and the existence of soul can be proved through outcomes. Like, scientists do believe in outcomes. They believe in cause and effect. And, for instance, let's say, when Prabhupada went to the U.S., like, there were so many addicted people out there. And when they started chanting...
Only in the U.S. addicted people. Not in Mumbai. Go on.
When he made them chant, they said that, yeah, we feel a high.
Mm-hmm.
We feel a high and we don't need the drugs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, doesn't that prove that they were connecting to something which was giving them the energy?
Scientists will say that the chanting just releases chemicals in your brain that give you a feeling of well-being.
Yeah, like if the scientist wants to refute, then the scientist can refute.
Mm-hmm.
But if the scientist really wants to, is really listening to you, then what you are saying is quite valid, that there is some cause and effect happening over there.
That by repeating some words over and over again.
It's not just repeating words, it's repeating words with feeling.
Any words, just say it with feeling, is that it?
No, it's like...
What words?
It's like repeating the name of God with feeling.
So
you're connecting to the higher realm,
mm-hmm.
and in the process, like, your soul gets elevated, and you don't need the drugs anymore. You're getting a high without the drugs.
You know. All right, so is there anything else besides getting rid of drugs that can happen from this chanting? Or is it only for the drug people? What about the career people?
You get more productive, you know,
so yeah. Oh, you get higher salary? Okay, let us all chant then. More chanting, is that the point of the chanting? The higher salary, more productive? What is the point of the chanting then that you're talking about? You say Prabhupada went to the US, he brought the chanting and drugged hippies, gave it up.
Yes.
So,
there's transformation at different levels. So this is like one transformation which took place. Like people got rid of their addictions.
Alright, but you don't take drugs, right? Okay, so what does the chanting do for you then? Maybe you don't need the chanting because you don't take drugs.
But for me, it does other things, like it gives me serenity, it gives me calm, it reduces my anxiety.
So you can push ahead more for the career.
Yeah, and I'm more productive. That is true. That's a byproduct. Like.
Oh, it's a byproduct, but what is the main product?
The main product is that it makes you more attuned to the spirit.
More attuned to the spirit. What do you mean by spirit? Well, one at a time.
So when you're chanting, you're connecting to the spirit. The
connecting soul, to what?
The soul is connecting to the spirit.
Okay, but I want to know about the spirit that the soul is connecting to. Where do I find that information?
That information is there in the outcomes that the spirit brings about.
Can you tell us about this supreme spirit?
The Supreme Spirit can be known through meditation.
Okay, well tell us about it. We can be known, but now tell. Say.
I can put the scientists through a meditation. At the end of which, some of them will definitely say, yes, I felt something.
Okay. What is it? You tell us.
It is their connection to the higher source.
What is that higher source? Tell us about it.
That higher source is the source which controls everything around.
Great, great. Introduce us. Tell us. give us some specific knowledge.
It is the supreme self. It is the energy.
Yes, 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 yes. But please, can you be more specific?
It is the one which created the universe.
Generic words. Give us specific.
It is the one which drives all cause and effect.
What does this one look like? Give a specific description. Details.
It looks like very beautiful. What it feels like than it looks like.
Why? Give me a sensory description of the Supreme Absolute Truth.
Infinite abundance and infinite ability. So unrestrained ability to give and
but still this is all vague. Where is the knowledge of God?
It can only be felt through meditation, or it can be understood through outcomes. You cannot, like, unless God decides to give you a glimpse of Himself, you cannot have a glimpse of Him.
Okay, but
to have a glimpse of God, the scientist needs to.
Okay, well, tell us what that glimpse is. What does the glimpse look like?
That glimpse of God is.
You gotta experience.
Wait, you let's calm down.
It looks like there's someone who's very ecstatic.
Someone who's very ecstatic? That's the glimpse of God?
Very ecstatic and very compassionate.
Who?
Someone who, it's a power which is very extreme, very compassionate.
I need specific knowledge of God.
We would like to know from you what is the specific knowledge of God. We would like to know from you, Prabhuji. We are just wasting our time.
No. How can you be wasting? You told you. So many of you are saying. So many of you are saying that everyone in India has an innate or instinct of what is God, as compared to the gross Aussies. So I want to know, what is God?
Sir, in
Hindi. No, you wait. Someone else speak. You've all had your chance. I want to know the superiority of the culture. What is God? No one can say it.
No, I can say it.
No, wait. Let's see if someone else.
Source of everything.
The source of everything. Oh, great. Okay, well, describe the source of everything. I don't know. Huh? That's why you're here. Very good. Okay, you came to the right place. First, I just have to shake you up a bit. Now, just see, this is the situation. You all have this instinct, this natural intuition, there's God, but no one can say what is God. That means we need more knowledge. We need to make more progress. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining himself. He tells you all about himself. He tells you, yes, he's the source of all energies. He describes himself. He describes his abode, where he lives. He describes his activities, his qualities. You're hearing directly from Krishna himself. Now you can say, how do we know it's Krishna who's giving us the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, right? He gives you the methods to verify what he's saying. He gives you the laboratory procedures by which you can experience what he's saying, and you can experience Krishna himself. What more do you want? What more do you want? But then what will you say? Oh, it's very nice, but we have no time, right? Maybe later, Swamiji, when we are 50 or 60, then we will have time. But now we have so much hard work to do, right? So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains about himself, his relationship to the material world, his relationship to the spiritual world. And then you go to the postgraduate study of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and you find all about Krishna's name, form, qualities, activities. He explains why he does things. So we need to equip ourselves with this most deep knowledge of God, most comprehensive knowledge of God. That is India's greatest gift to the world. It's not enough to just say, I believe there's God, or I have an intuition there's God. Not only is Krishna giving you knowledge of himself, but he's giving you knowledge of the techniques by which you can verify his existence. That's why Krishna doesn't talk about religious belief. He's talking instead, what does he say? Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. This supreme dharma is directly perceived by the purified senses. By practicing bhakti yoga, your senses become purified so that you can actually perceive the spiritual reality. Therefore, this science of bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness is the greatest necessity for the world. There cannot be world peace without this supreme science of connecting to God and understanding God and loving God. There can't be any world peace. So it is your responsibility to master this science and teach it to others. So my question is, will you accept that responsibility to advance beyond religious sentiment, to advance beyond just this intuition? I think there's a God. I just have that feeling deep in my stomach that there's God. Will you accept responsibility for yourself, for your future families? So many of you will marry, have children. Will you accept that responsibility for your family? Will you accept that responsibility for the world? To equip yourself with genuine knowledge of God and to become aware of the techniques for experiencing what is God. Then you'll be able to not be bewildered by this atheistic scientific propaganda. When they say, look at the horrible things that happen in this world, and you say that there's a God in control. So many of you will reply, but the horrible things happen because of karma. Some people are getting their reactions to what they did before. But what is that system of action and reaction? Who's in charge of the system? We need information about these things. So please remember Lord Krishna's gift in Bhagavad Gita. Raja Vidya Rajaguyam, the king of all knowledge, the most secret of all secrets, the perfection of religion. Why the perfection of religion? Perfect because you don't believe, you practice the techniques so that you experience. How can you miss such an opportunity? Anyone who seriously takes to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra sees their whole consciousness change. I know some of you here, you started to chant Hare Krishna, you see for yourself. So you should ask those who have started to chant Hare Krishna, ask them for their testimony, their laboratory reports. Ask them about the techniques of bhakti yoga and how they're applying them in their life. This is the unique gift that India can give to the world. Spiritual experience, not just religion or religious belief, but laboratory experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is what Bhagavad Gita is offering. So I beg you to please take this knowledge seriously. Take this opportunity very seriously. Don't just bury yourself in work, 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 careers, careers. Yeah, you maintain yourself, but that's not the only thing in life. And it's not the most important thing in life. You have such an opportunity. Such potential is waiting for you. So I'll tell you the truth. Yeah. You take your religious sentiment, those religious instincts that you were talking about, combine that with the Raja Vidya, the king of all knowledge that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, and you'll be unstoppable. What do you think? The sentiments are right, but it's not enough to sustain you or to help others. Combine the sentiment, the natural instinct that, oh, there's a God. Combine that with knowledge of God and you'll be very powerful and able to help the whole world. So first, step number one is to introduce yourself to Bhagavad Gita in a serious, committed way. We want you to all have a serious, committed relationship with Bhagavad Gita. And then, gradually you'll see your consciousness rise. You'll want to take up the daily practice of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra so you can test for yourself what are the effects. As you make spiritual advancement, you'll be able to help others to make spiritual advancement. And in this way, more people will have the opportunity to make solid progress toward the ultimate goal of life. What is that ultimate goal of life? Pure love of Krishna, without any material reason. All this is waiting for you. Once again, it's not about giving up your careers, giving up your school. It's about adding the number one priority. That's all. Okay? Any questions? Let's try to hear from those who haven't spoken so much yet. Yes.
How do you take up seriously reading Bhagavad Gita? Can you explain that?
How do we take up seriously
reading Bhagavad Gita? Like, then we just go about reading it because it's the slogans are Sanskrit and then the explanations are in English. But I mean, to an ordinary person like me, I wouldn't understand it on myself. I need somebody to explain. Hmm. So how do I take up seriously?
Yes, you can understand quite a bit on your own, so you may read in your own home from beginning to end. And then you can join Bhagavad Gita study groups. And because you're hearing and learning Bhagavad Gita in the association of dedicated practitioners, you'll get even more taste, even more experience. So both ways, on your own and in a Bhagavad Gita study group. If you do that, you'll see the meaning of Bhagavad Gita become revealed to you. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes Machatama Gata Prana Bhuryanta Parasparam. My pure devotees, my pure practitioners, they gather together and they get great delight and joy talking about me and conversing about me, thinking about me, discussing me. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that just like research scientists like to have gatherings where they discuss their latest findings, similarly, practitioners of Krishna consciousness, bhaktas, like to come together and discuss their experiences of Krishna. So in that way your learning accelerates.
But what about pronunciation of the Sanskrit slogans? Like, probably we might not be as good as, like, would you pronounce it? Is the pronunciation as important as the understanding it, or is it?
The sincerity is most important. Your attitude. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say you have to be a Sanskrit scholar. He does say you apply your devotion, your bhakti. You try your best. You read English though, yes? Okay then. So you read the English. Gradually you learn the Sanskrit pronunciation just by being around devotees. But you read the English. How much time will you put for doing this?
I haven't seriously started.
You have?
I haven't seriously started reading Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, why not?
I do have a book at home, but not seriously started reading. I just haven't gone through the whole book as yet.
Are you serious about it?
I shall start it.
All right. How much time will you spend?
Is it any time slot that we should not in the morning or something like that?
It depends on how much you want the best thing, how eager you are.
Let's try first 15-20 minutes
a day. That's better than nothing. 15 or 20 minutes out of the day. But certainly you could do more. Out of 24 hours in the day, you can only find 15 or 20 minutes?
And you're chanting round. I mean, that takes time.
Oh. You're chanting round. Very good.
Then you have work and things to do.
Try for a half hour a day, at least. Very good. And then you can get together with devotees and discuss Bhagavad Gita. That's very nice. Any other questions? I hope that some of you are thinking it is possible for you to actually become a spiritual scientist. I hope some of you are thinking that. Think what your number one priority is. That you have the number one priority, which is Krishna consciousness, doesn't mean you have to stop everything else, but just recognize what's the most important thing. That's all. And then see how your life becomes transformed. So my wish, my desire, is that all of you will become great spiritual scientists in Krishna consciousness who can understand this greatest knowledge of God and give it to others. Let us once again, in closing, hear from Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.